Hey guys, Jim Vanosky with Manufacturing Talks. Ms. America 2023 is here with us today. Grace Stanky just finished her term as Ms. America this past month, and her platform that she advocated for during her time as Ms. America was nuclear energy. And she's here to talk about that, talk about why we need to be doing more of it, why there's so many misperceptions about it, all kinds of stuff about nuclear. She is now an official nuclear engineer, so she's bringing a lot to the table. Grace will be with us in just a minute. Stay tuned here on Manufacturing Talks.
Welcome to Manufacturing Talks with Jim Vanosky. Industry has a million cool stories, and Jim talks to the movers and shakers who are making them happen. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to Manufacturing Talks. I am Jim Vanosky. Very pleased to have Grace Stanky. She is former Miss America and nuclear engineer, and she's here to talk to us about nuclear and a lot of other things. Welcome, Grace.
Hey, hey. I am so stoked to be here. I am indeed a former Miss America, so I served as Miss America for 2023. I just graduated with my nuclear engineering degree in December, and I'm so stoked. I spent the year as Miss America. I traveled about 280,000 miles. I know all the airports. I know all of the best travel hacks. But I also spent most of that time traveling, talking about nuclear energy and how America and the world can continue to improve its energy grid.
Well, congratulations on the double whammy there, your graduation and your finishing your tenure. Fantastic stuff.
It's been an exciting past couple of months. It's been wild.
Yeah, for sure. You've been busy.
Yeah.
But we should say, too, you're also former Miss Wisconsin. And we talked before we got on. I've got my Upper Midwest red flannel on for Grace. I also have a Wisconsin MRI.
Oh my God, I love it.
Machining. You know those guys? They're over in Augusta.
Yeah. I love that. That's awesome. Well, and it's crazy because like you've got the flannel on, but today, I mean, it's like almost 50 degrees out. I just was outside, like literally just sitting there taking a couple phone calls. And I'm like, wow, I can't beat this weather right now.
I'm from way up north of where Grace is from in Wausau. I'm from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and I had friends up there to go snowmobiling last week. There was no snow.
Yeah, that's my brother's a big snowmobiler, and they made the trip up to the UP, and there was nothing open, actually. Yep. Like they said online it was, but there was nothing actually open once they got up there. So, and it's funny because you talk about that. So where I'm from in Wisconsin, I consider it central Wisconsin, but a lot of people from Wisconsin consider where I'm from up north. Where you're from, that's my up north, which means it's really north.
For sure. Well, so Grace, you mentioned you just finished your degree in nuclear engineering. What is it that led you that direction?
Oh, this is a fun story. So I was a 16-year-old teenage girl, had no idea what I wanted to do with my life, as most 16-year-olds have no idea what they want to do with their lives. And I knew I liked math. I knew I liked science. I saw my dad, who was a civil engineer growing up, that he would take us to construction sites. We'd watch bridges get built, demoed, all this sort of stuff. And I loved that. I loved seeing him use math and science for a positive impact on people and helping them live their daily lives in a better way. So I liked engineering. I knew I would want to go into engineering, but I had no idea what kind. You know, I liked seeing civil, but I didn't really want to do civil. So I ended up kind of exploring all these different majors. And honestly, when I saw nuclear engineering, at this point in time, all I know about nuclear is World War II from history class. And I'm like, there's a maximum of two reactors in all of America. Like there is a maximum of two. There's no way there's more. And I see nuclear engineering on the list of a college I was visiting. And I go, man, what a flex it would be to say I'm a nuclear engineer. Like imagine that 50th high school class reunion. You can't beat that. That's the best career, right? Unexpected. Exactly. I'm like, you can't go wrong with that. This sounds awesome. So I go back home and I'm talking with my dad and I'm like, listen, dad, so I've got it narrowed down between nuclear engineering and aerospace engineering, which keep in mind, the only reason both of those were on the list is because they both just sounded really cool. So I go through and I ask him and, you know, he puts on his parent voice, you know, you're a dad. So I'm sure you know what I mean when I say parent voice. Right. He's got his arms crossed. He's 6'6", so big guy. And he's like, Grace, don't go into nuclear. There's no future there. Now, for a 16-year-old teenage girl, that means go and do it. So I got into nuclear out of spite initially against my father, because when my dad tells me not to do something, I was going to go and do it. And that's what started it all. Now, the reason I'm still in nuclear and the reason I'm a passionate advocate for it is what I learned in that first semester. So I mentioned that, you know, when I got into it, I didn't really know much about the field, which I feel like is where most people are at, right? That's what the education system here kind of teaches you about nuclear growing up. But that first semester in school, I learned that the reason my dad's alive, a two-time cancer survivor, is because of nuclear medicine.
Oh, wow.
I learned that it's been powering America. 20% of America's electricity comes from nuclear power and has for about 60 years. I learned that bananas are radioactive, smoke detectors, granite countertops, all of these things in our daily lives. And it's already affecting us in ways we don't even know it. And it's already positively influencing us in ways we don't even know it. In the forms of cancer treatments, medicinal stuff, maybe producing the electricity for your home. So in my mind, I was like, all right, I'm all in, because imagine if we did fully embrace this technology. Imagine if we did recognize it for what it can do and the potential this industry can bring. Imagine how much good it can do for the world then.
Yep. When you think about it, you just finished your degree and you're at the cusp of your career. What do you want to do with the degree? What do you want to do specifically in the nuclear field?
So starting in March, I'll be working for Constellation. So they own and operate 12 different nuclear power plants across the country. So part of my job, I've got a very new role that's kind of exciting for the industry that we've never really seen before. It's a hybrid engineering and advocacy role. So I like talking. You know, I always say that I talk way too much to be just an engineer. Like, I love math, I love science, I love patterns. But I love people and I love stories and I love connecting with people too. Like, that's something that's so awesome to me. So this role is going to be really fun, where I'll be able to do both of those things. So I'll be a nuclear fuels engineer, meaning I'll go through training, I'll get certs, I'll get all the qualifications, all of those things. But I'll also continue doing advocacy slightly less. So like, if we had to choose a balance, you know, choose one more than the other, engineering is going to be the one that's done a little bit more. But then from there, advocacy is going to be continuing outreach, continuing education, and all of these awesome things that I love to do.
Cool. Well, now I've got some questions about nuclear, like you were touching on, around what it can offer for our electric grid. But before we get into that, I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't dive into the whole Miss Wisconsin, Miss America thing too. What took you down that road?
Oh, okay. So initially my violin, I'm a violinist. So when I started competing as a teen, I was 13 years old, and I sucked at performing. Like, there's no other way to say it other than I was just really bad at performing violin. And for whatever reason, my solution was to just do it more. And I found the Miss America's Teen opportunity, an organization, and I ended up competing the first year at large. And then I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for more than just the talent side of it. I loved the women I met. It's really awesome, because I find that the Miss America organization is a place where it's cool to be successful, cool to be kind, cool to be ambitious, like all of this stuff, and to genuinely support each other. On top of that, it's scholarship dollars, continuing to develop professional skills, amazing networking. It was really an awesome opportunity. So I competed for 2 years in teen. I won on the second try at state, and you can only win a state title once in each age division. So you can only go to the national competition once, is sort of the rule there. So once I won that state teen title, I was out, you know, I was done competing in teen, and I had to age up into Miss. Well, when I turned 18, I wasn't initially planning on competing, but I got to college and I realized adulting is the worst thing in the world, and college is really expensive and I can't afford it. So another cool thing about Miss America is it's a scholarship organization. So I came back to it to help earn scholarship dollars towards school and to additionally grow a platform to talk about nuclear science and how awesome it is.
Very cool. And I will vouch for you. I have to preface this here at Manufacturing Talks. Our primary music is heavy metal music. Okay. But
I love it.
We can flex, and we have appreciation for everything. But I'll say, I went and watched your violin performance at Miss America, which, by the way, you won, right? You won the scholarship?
Yeah, so I won the preliminary talent award. So the night of preliminary, so I competed against about half of the girls that evening. I was the highest scoring talent that night.
So obviously you've come a long way from the time you were 13 and you couldn't perform.
Yes.
And I will vouch for that, because you were performing what to me was a very complex classical piece, right?
Oh, well, thanks. Well, I mean, if you guys are heavy metal people, actually, so I have an electric violin
Oh,
and
sweet.
I
Yep.
used a looping station 1 year. In the first year I competed at Miss Wisconsin, I played Thunderstruck by AC/DC. So
Oh,
that was year
nice.
one. And then year two was the classical one that you saw. So a big change, but a ton of fun.
Please tell me the video is out there. I can go search for that.
You know, I used to have it posted on, it might be on like my personal Facebook if you go way back. Like you're going to have to go way back. But I can probably find one. It's really fun. And that's something I'm super excited for continuing into this like former life. No, I'm not competing anymore, but I love my violin. And I actually like sort of doing a classic rock twist on classical music. I think it's a ton of fun because even the performance that you were listening to, you know, the accompaniment, we didn't just have an orchestra accompaniment. We use mostly drums and guitar. So it's stuff like that that I really enjoy doing. So I'm excited to continue doing that just for fun and like just for me, you know, hobbies are great and I'm so stoked.
Awesome. Well, and you know, if you ever want to branch out further, I am connected on LinkedIn with Charlie Daniels, former manager. So you want to go country? Let me know.
Oh, I love it. Well, I don't know about that. I don't know if I'll ever do it professionally, but that's actually super awesome.
The power of networking, right?
It's true. It's true. And LinkedIn, especially, I think LinkedIn is super underrated.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
It's great. It's great.
It's how we connected.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just happened to see you posting about you handing off the crown. And by the way, that's phenomenal. The new Miss America's active duty Air Force, correct?
Yes. Yes. Madison is an incredible, incredible young woman. And I'm really, really thrilled to follow her year as Miss America.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome stuff. So yeah, I saw that post. I thought, well, nuclear, you know, I've had numerous people on talking about our need for reliable and affordable energy.
Yeah.
Who better than nuclear advocating former Miss America? Shout your note, here you are.
I love it. I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's awesome. So let's get into that. You know, I have had a number of really, really excellent guests talking about the fragility of our electric grid and some of the drawbacks of the direction we're going. And all of them believe that nuclear is an important part of our future. And
I
love
it.
The advocacy you're bringing to that because I agree with them. If you're interested in reducing CO2 emissions, you have to be in favor of nuclear, right?
Can you tell that to like every politician in the world, please?
I'm trying. I am trying, Grace. That's why you're here.
Oh man, I love it.
Well,
but it
so
is
tell
true,
us
though.
Why
I
that
mean,
is.
Yeah. So I mean, the biggest thing that I think we need to be talking more about, you know, I'm Gen Z. I'm one of these young people that loves to talk about climate change because that's Gen Z's generational issue, right? It's something that honestly, throughout my advocacy work, young people are usually the most open to talking about energy solutions. However, what we're not doing as an entire planet, as a country, as you know, each caucus in the government is talking about all of these things. The one thing that we're forgetting to talk about is reliable energy for our baseload energy. So baseload electricity and baseload energy, this may have been talked about before on this show, but that's basically 70% of our total electricity always has to be accessible. That's so we can plug in our phones, that's so we can plug in our AirPods when we get home from work, that's so your electricity runs, your washer, your dryer, your stove, your heat, your AC, whatever it may be. That's just sort of this like required power it takes for us to live our lives. The other 30% is sort of that extra electricity to help with peaking and things like that. So when it comes to that baseload source of power, it needs to always be available. Yep. And unfortunately, you know, this is just my opinion, renewables aren't always 100% available, and battery technology to make them 100% available is just as much of an investment, if not more than an investment, and more waste produced than it is to create a nuclear power plant. As with nuclear energy and the innovations and modernizations that have happened, it's really, really incredible. You know, all of our current plants have pretty much been built in the 70s and 80s and that sort of time frame. We just had the first one come online in 2023, the first newly newly constructed reactor in about 30 years in America, and they're going to have another unit come online here in early 2024. So that goes to show that we haven't built new reactors in a while. Right. That means there's been a lot of innovation to what we call small modular reactors and advanced reactors, generation 4 reactors, and honestly, we can go down that rabbit hole, but that would take hours. But it's honestly incredible technology that's going to lead to cheaper costs for building. It's going to lead to smaller power plants with less of security risks. It's going to lead to cycle lengths instead of being just a year. Plants can run entirely automatic for 8 years. That's what the military is pursuing right now with the Army and with the Air Force. It's really just amazing technology that we should be utilizing in the commercial sector more.
Right. And I should have mentioned, I'm a fellow engineer. I'm a mechanical engineer. Ooh, I could dive into the details all day long, but that's not going to probably please a lot of people in our audience.
So we'll No, you're good. Hey, and nuclear, we need all the different types of engineers, which I think is something that's really cool to talk about, because I would say there's more mechanical and electrical engineers working in the nuclear industry than there are nuclear engineers.
Yeah, I believe it.
So it's really, there's a place for everybody in nuclear. It's super cool because we all sit there and we love to all nerd out about random engineering topics. It's great. It's great.
But you kind of led to this next question when you mentioned radiation, and the reality is there's all this background radiation people don't know about and think about. What do you say to people who say, well, nuclear is just too dangerous because of the radiation and the nuclear waste?
Oh my gosh, I have a really funny story about this, actually. So this is just about the safety of a power plant and everything, and I'll get into the radiation and waste in a second. But do you remember last year, it was like August, September-ish, there was the prisoner that like spider crawled his way out of a prison, and he was a murderer and like actually escaped that prison in Pennsylvania?
Yep. Yep.
Okay, so he was running around, and I was traveling as Miss America, and it was funny because I was talking with my dad a couple days before I had to fly out, and he's like, oh, where are you headed next? And I'm like, oh, I'm headed to Pennsylvania. And like, we were just finishing talking about this murderer who's like running around and all this stuff. And he's like, oh, where are you going? And I'm going to Philadelphia. I was flying into, which is where this prisoner was running around and everything. And I'm like, yeah, I headed to Philly. You know, I'm going to go to a nuclear power plant. It's going to be great. It's going to be fine. And he's like, okay, well, like, be super careful. Like, I don't love you going there with all that, just because he's a dad, right? Concerned father, the whole circumstance. And it turns out that the murderer was caught only a few miles away from the power plant I was visiting about an hour before I arrived. However, the point I want to make here is, when there is a crazy murderer running around, there is no place I would rather be than a nuclear power plant.
Very good point.
Because there is security, there is planning, there are procedures in place. It's been thought out. Like, it is one of the most secure facilities, and it's also one of the safest as an employee too. So one of the fun facts I like to share is, it's as a nuclear engineer who is probably going to end up working in a power plant at some point in my life for outages or for whatever it might be, it's safer to work at a nuclear power plant than it is to work at a grocery store or a fast food restaurant or a bookstore or any sort of job like that. And that is supported by 2022 lethal and non-lethal statistics from OSHA and from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. I can gladly provide links to that. There are only about 8 industries safer to work in. And it's things like accounting, or like data analytics and stuff like that.
Yep.
So that just says a lot about the standard of safety that the nuclear industry has for its employees and for its workers. When it comes to the safety of the overall power plants, one thing I like to talk about is, let's talk about the bigger picture here, right? When people are concerned about safety, they're concerned about 3 incidents over 60 years of producing 10% of the world's electricity. No other industry has anything even remotely close to that, right? Like, that's the one thing, is that nuclear is held to such a higher standard for good reason. I'm not saying we should lower those standards, but it's held to such a high standard, and it is succeeding. Here in America, we have 93 reactors online right now that have been operating excellently for some of them for 40, 50 years. Right. And they'll continue to do that up to an 80-year lifespan, if not a 100-year lifespan. And that's something that's really just incredible to think about, you know, comparing all 3 of those major disasters to just the Gulf of Mexico oil spill, the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. Let's do that, right? And then come back to me and talk to me about safety, right? So But ultimately, when it comes to waste, I always say it's not a science problem, it's a policy problem. Globally, spent nuclear fuel is being reprocessed, it's being recycled. We can actually recycle 90 to 95% of it right now. We just don't in America because it's uneconomical and it's not necessarily politically viable either. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things that it's, like I said, not a science problem, it's a policy problem that we have here in America. Yep. Total, I've mentioned this numerous times, but 20% of America's electricity for 60 years. That's a lot of electricity being generated. All of the spent nuclear fuels fits inside of a supersized Walmart. And we are the only industry that knows exactly where every single piece of that spent nuclear fuel is. You know, no other energy production industry can say that they know where all of their waste is. Right. And again, this comes back to nuclear is held to an incredibly high standard and for good reason. And we're delivering on that.
And
that was a very long answer there. So sorry.
the comparison of safety statistics is phenomenal, and it's exactly right. That piece you said about policy problems leads to the other half of this question, and that is around cost. You know, because it's a knee-jerk, other than safety, you always hear as well, nuclear is just too expensive. And mm-hmm. I kind of led part of the answer because we know part of that's because of our policies. But what do you say to the people who say it's too expensive?
Well, a large part of it is policy, right? So if we think back to the 70s and 80s when these were constructed, nuclear wasn't in the same political climate. You know, it was accepted, it was promoted, yet, and those power plants were built within 2 years. They were on time, they were on budget. Like, so why, what happened between then and now that we can't build plants on time and on budget anymore? You know, the one that opened up last year, it went twice the time, twice the budget. I'll say it, I'll acknowledge it. But the reason that is because of the excruciatingly more difficult policies that are being put in place. Which is for good reason, but when you have an industry being completely regulated by anti that industry types of folks, that leads to unnecessary problems rather than problems actually focusing on solutions. It's just problems focused on creating more problems. And that's where it comes down to looking at how that is set up on a national level and from a policy standpoint. When it comes to the cost overall and the cost of the power once that plant is successfully built, innovation, and this comes back to that modernization and advanced reactor design. One thing that's really cool with these advanced reactors, I talked about small modular reactors, so SMRs, which is basically taking technology that's already been being used in our submarines and the Navy and bringing it to the commercial world. These can be manufactured in a factory. In theory, you know, we don't have it happening yet, but that brings down construction costs immensely. And the one thing when it comes to a nuclear power plant is you're not just investing in generating energy, but you're investing quite literally in generations. We live in America, you know, people are a little bit more short term. They're not thinking about the long term necessarily. And nuclear does require a long term mindset and a look at the long term sort of lifespan. You know, I talked about how nuclear power plants have 80 plus years of a lifespan. That means you're investing not just in generating energy, but you're investing in quite literally generations of it. So that's something moving forward, keeping in mind for kids, for grandkids, for great grandkids. How does that energy grid look?
So if we talk about some of those legislative and public policy regulatory hurdles we have, what are your recommendations for changes that we need to make nuclear more competitive?
One thing that I've been personally working on is just getting nuclear energy recognized as clean energy in all 50 states, right? Like that's something that I was shocked when I realized wasn't a thing. And I highly recommend, I know Colorado's actively working on this, Kentucky's actively working on this, I believe Hawaii is as well. I can definitely provide references. I encourage listeners, if you live in a state where nuclear is not recognized as a clean energy, work with senators that are proposing bills that it is, because I can promise you there probably is bill, senator or house representatives, whichever side, work with those state politicians and testify in support of this. you live in that state, get that state to specifically say it in law, nuclear energy is clean energy. Yeah. So that's step number one that I'm personally working on. And I, like I said, I will provide references, all that information if desired. Yeah. Yep. And that's something that really puts nuclear in a better position moving forward, because then it's a conversation, not just about renewable energy, not just about hydroelectric energy. It's about just clean energy then. And we can build a healthy, diverse energy portfolio that's not just nuclear, not just renewables, and not just hydro. It's a combination of all of those things working together to build a reliable and healthy energy grid that's also clean and emissions free.
Yeah. Excellent. As you look at our grids, what is your thought around, you know, how much more nuclear should we have to really build our grids correctly?
Oh, so it's as in COP28. Last year, so this big international climate change conference, the United States signed an agreement with 21 other countries to triple global nuclear capacity by 2050. For me personally, my ideal energy portfolio here in America are 70% baseload energy. Let's look at just that. I personally believe we should have 30 to 40% being nuclear energy, because it's safe, it's reliable, it provides good paying jobs, it provides millions of dollars to those communities, it can continue to supply data centers, it can continue to provide that electricity 24/7, 365 that we need moving forward, right? So 30 to 40% should be nuclear. And now 20 to 30%, I would love to see be hydroelectric. I'm not an expert on hydro. I don't know how much more we can actually build in America, you know, in all honesty. Mm-hmm. And then I would say the last 10%, I don't think we'll ever be able to completely get rid of fossil fuels, just because there will be some circumstances where it does make sense. Mm-hmm. So that last 10% of that baseload, I kind of leave for fossil fuels. The remaining 30% energy outside of baseload, let's use renewables. Let's use offshore wind. Let's use solar farms. Let's use all of those different opportunities of biomass, geothermal, whatever it might be. What makes most sense for that geographical area is the biggest thing. You know, you're from the upper Midwest, I'm from Wisconsin, right? Like, yep. it's this has been a weird winter, but we typically have a lot of snow and not a lot of sun. So yeah, it's something that it's got to make sense for that geographical area for that extra 30% energy. Yeah. So that's personal opinion on what I'd like to see.
And we haven't had a typical winter, but if you look at how this year it looks like we're going to have winter having been packed into like a 2 to 3 week period there in January. Mm-hmm. During that period, it was super cold. It was dark, dreary, little wind. You know, it was the exact scenario they talk about, where if we'd been relying on solar and wind, we'd have been in deep trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the temperatures too. I mean, for people from all over the country that aren't super aware, you know, I will say I avoided that brutal cold this year. But I was in Florida handing off the Miss America crown. Beautiful. So I didn't have to deal with it. But Wisconsin usually has this, the upper Midwest usually has this, where it gets anywhere from negative 20 degrees to negative 60 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. For probably 2, maybe 3 weeks. Once you incorporate wind chill, it gets nasty. And ultimately, that's quite literally life-threatening temperatures if you don't have access to energy to run your heat in your home. Yep. So that's where, I, as much as I hate to admit it, we as a human species in America specifically, we really rely on electricity in order to function and survive. Yep. So I'll acknowledge it. You know, I never did Girl Scouts. Zombie apocalypse happens, I'm screwed. Okay, I'm not making it very long.
You're not building a fire out in the yard.
No, I don't know if I could start a fire without like one of those little fire starter bricks, you know, I'm like, listen, I'm done. And that's because I've grown up with these resources and these luxuries. Yeah. So here in America, we've got to make sure we keep that.
So I don't know if you saw the news. We do have what looks like some good news here in Michigan, where we had the Palisades nuclear plant shut down, and it looks like we're going to be restarting it.
Oh yeah. Well, it's applied to be restarted. Yeah. So I also want to talk a little bit more about that, because I don't know if you saw the co-op in that area also wants to build SMRs on the property as well.
Right.
If the restarting application license doesn't go through, or I think nonetheless, whether it goes through or not, they want to build those SMRs. Yep. I love that the co-ops are the people that are stepping up to build these SMRs. Because so right now we sort of have this, I don't want to call it like chicken and egg problem, but we have this lack of bold leadership and who wants to build the first SMR. And honestly, these co-ops who are comprised of rural Americans, you know, that are living in countryside and running the farms mm-hmm. and need that extra electricity, they're the ones saying, we need these SMRs and we're ready to build them. And I think it is the coolest thing in the world. And I think it's like a very like patriotic moment too, that it's the people themselves that are part of these co-ops that are saying, we want this, we're just going to pull up our boots and make it happen. And I think that's so cool. Yeah. I've worked a lot with the Wisconsin co-op and Arkansas co-op and things like that. And it's just really neat to see that happening.
Yeah. Well, I'm a small town guy myself, as we talked about, plus I've spent my whole career in manufacturing. And I always say that, you know, manufacturers in particular, we rely for our business models on reliable, affordable power. And if we don't have that, a lot of us are going out of business and our business is going overseas.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and that's where it's neat to see that priority coming in to focus on that reliable energy. And that's beyond just, you know, this climate change discussion and emissions free. Yep. Reliable energy is just reliable energy. That's what we need. And nuclear is one of those things that luckily it checks both the boxes of emissions free and reliable. And we should be doing more of it.
Right. Yeah. And you talked about, you know, your generation being tied in with this. And one thing, young people have to realize is you guys are all addicted to technology, right? Well, technology
100%.
Increasingly requires power. Have you seen the figures on AI and how much more power that's going to require? It's insane.
Well, and that's one thing, you know, I mentioned data centers earlier. That is one of the largest proponents for innovation and people who are also likely to probably build these micro reactors and small modular reactors first. Yeah. Is Microsoft and all of these big companies that want to have just small nuclear reactors that they can just turn on and it runs for 8 years and they never have to worry about power getting into their data centers and things like that, which it's something that's amazing. And, you know, with the transition to electric vehicles, which we need a little bit more innovation because it's left my family stranded multiple times in the cold weather up here. But as America transitions to EVs, you know, we've got to keep that in mind because our power demand's just going to continue to grow too.
Yep, for sure. What haven't we hit on? Anything else you want to talk about before we wrap up, Grace?
Oh my gosh. I have a question for you, actually. So manufacturing side.
This may be a first. I don't know that this has ever happened in the 90-ish episodes. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, podcast should be conversations. But I was sitting there thinking about this because manufacturing specifically. So how much has fusion been talked about, or how much do you specifically know about fusion and the industry there?
I can tell you in manufacturing, it's not really talked about at all because manufacturers kind of rely on other people to bring them, you know, their electricity, their gas, their whatever power and utilities they need. I know personally that we're making some strides. It's probably still not viable in the near future, but it sounds like there's growing promise there.
Yeah. So I just wanted to kind of bring this up because fusion, fusion is seen as like the holy grail of energy and this whole thing, which it really is. You know, we can use water to fuel it and we pretty much get unlimited clean electricity. So it's like super cool. But ultimately, I guess like I'm super curious to know if there is any partnerships or interest from the manufacturing side to sort of work on increasing the innovations in terms of supporting the precise, like intense high-level manufacturing that needs to happen. Because I know a lot of fusion companies, they're like, we've got the physics and the simulation. It's just difficult to get these, you know, these massive magnets created and manufactured to such a precise manner and things like that. So I don't know. It was just one thing that I wanted to kind of ask about just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
If you knew anything.
Honestly, based on what I know, I think right now there's basic ignorance in the manufacturing world about what those needs are. So, you know, if I can help get the word out on, you know, what people are looking for and who might be able to help them. I know lots of folks in lots of places in manufacturing.
Awesome.
So Yeah, I'd be happy.
Well,
to,
hey, and maybe even just listening. Yeah, maybe even just listening to this. You know, I encourage manufacturers get connected with Fusion folks. There's a ton of massive private investors getting involved in Fusion that would probably be a pretty good business opportunity too. So my little two cents of collaboration between nuclear and manufacturing.
Well, and I love how it ties back to my world too. That's phenomenal. And opportunity. People are always looking for it.
Indeed, indeed. Awesome.
Well, last question, Grace. You graduated, you finished Miss America, you have a job that you're going to be starting here, but what are you doing now? What's next?
Whoa. So immediately right now, I'm actually going to Africa on Monday. So I'm glad we got this in. I literally was just packing for that. So I'm going to go climb Mount Kilimanjaro. I'm going to go take some time off. I'm really just, I'm in this in-between period between finishing up Miss America and starting my new position where I've done, like I said, a lot of really disgusting adult things too, where it's like finding an apartment completely on my own. I bought a car. And like I said, packing for this big trip where I call it my young and dumb trip. Should I be doing it? Probably not. But am I going to do it anyways? Yeah, because I'm never going to forget it. So I got the rest of my life to work. Exactly. That was very much so the mentality. So I'm super excited. I'm just enjoying life is the short answer.
You should enjoy life. And you had a lot of accomplishments. I'm going to be interested. Definitely plan on coming back to us after you've had some time in your job. Give us an update and tell us how you're doing. Cause I expect really great things continuing out of you, Grace. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Jim. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for joining us. I appreciate your time. Best of luck on your trip and best of luck with starting the new role.
Thank you so much.
And to wrap up, as always, thanks to you guys out there in the audience. That's why we're here. This was one of my favorite episodes so far. You know, we got to geek out. We got to learn some cool stuff. We got to make some plans for very important things we need for the future. I can't promise every show is going to be this impactful, but they're all going to be impactful. So we're here at least once a week, sometimes twice a week. Come back and see us. So long.
Thanks for tuning in to Manufacturing Talks with Jim Banoski. Watch for new episodes dropping every Tuesday. Don't forget to like, share, comment, and subscribe.